Accession number 28676, Mr. Jack Ball, Reel 3. Now, what about being judged ready for your first solo? How did it, just take us through your first solo. People sometimes remember their first solo, I'm not surprised, but what do you remember of your first solo and how you felt?
I was amazed to be sent on it, quite frankly.
Why?
It came out of the blue, and after 7 hours, and I remember it quite well, taking off. I don't remember the landing, quite frankly.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, I would say so.
And what about the flight? What do you remember about it?
I just did a circuit and came into land. To my relief, I was able to walk away. But
now, how did your training develop after that?
I was sent to Canada on Anson's, and I.
What about after you'd done your first solo? Did the training not progress or?
Yeah, yes, the training progressed.
Now, what did you have to learn there? You still flew often. I mean, it seems to be a mixture between yourself and then with Warrant Officer Unwin.
Yeah.
On and off, both of you, the pair of you.
Yeah.
And things like steep turns and such like that.
Well, you've got the book. Yeah, that's.
Anything you remember from those flights or at that time?
Only forced landings. We sort of made.
What was that? Tell us about force. What's the difference about force? Is that with the engine?
Well, the engine failed presumably, and so it throttled back, and you'd have to pick a field and. Make sure you get into it and into wind, etc. And it was a field you could reach without difficulty, hopefully. That was about it, quite frankly.
Anything else? So nothing much else about your time at Derby? Just flicking through, it seems to be what you do. Lots of taking off, steep turns, climbing turns, this kind of thing. Cross countries. What were the cross countries like? You started about that, but I mean, what were they like, the cross countries? They'd be on your own by this time, would they?
Oh, yeah, sure.
What was a cross country like? What's the purpose?
You had to find another airfield, and you had to map read all the way there. And you were taught how to do that.
Did you map read, or did any dead reckoning, or was it all just map reading?
Well, you set a course, and you marked your map with sort of V's at either end, so that if you found but it was map reading, really. I mean, you set a course and.
Any instrument flying?
Yeah, sorry.
Now, what is instrument flying? I mean, it's in your log, but that's why it's only sparked.
Yeah. They had a cloth hood, which they put over the cockpit, and you flew blind, really. And
what was that like? I mean, was it difficult to sort of trust the instruments in that way?
Well, at start off, it was, but you gradually got used to it, and... I was always better, in my opinion, at instrument flying than anything else.
Why do you think that was?
Because I'm shooting ahead here.
Okay, all right, we'll come back to that. So at this stage, instrument flying was just something you were learning.
Yeah, sure.
What about acrobatics? I mean, can you just go through, because people are always interested in how you actually do it. You may not remember now, because you don't do acrobatics in Anson, which is your main airplane, that much. What sort of acrobatics were you learning?
Looping the loop.
How did you do that? What was it like to loop the loop?
It was great. As long as you remember to look for the horizon coming up. Stall turns, flick rolls, slow rolls, barrel rolls, that sort of thing. They vary. It's
quite advanced stuff, flick rolls, things like that. They're not easy.
Flick roll was. I was always amazed. You sort of reversed the controls, as I remember, and you suddenly found yourself going the other way. I never quite figured that out. But it was they were good, and I used to enjoy them in those days.
What about low flying? Did you practice that much, or were you not allowed much
of
that?
We didn't do a lot of low flying, apart from, as I say, forced landings and that sort of thing.
Now, were you in any way being assessed? What about the assessment procedure? Do you see what I mean? There you are, you're a new pilot. I mean, when do they decide that you passed the course at the...
Well, I presume they assessed you all the way along. It would be down to your instructor to... there was the odd person who failed at that stage.
Were they also assessing you for what sort of aeroplane you were going to go on to?
I doubt it, quite frankly. Due to my later experience, I don't think they... you are either suitable for the bombers or fighters or whatever.
They didn't really decide at this stage.
I don't think they decided
at
this stage.
So you were just a pilot.
Yeah, I was a pilot.
If you weren't binned, then you were going on.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, you were going to be. You weren't sent to the United States. You were sent to Canada.
I was sent to Canada.
Now, when did you find out that was happening?
I can't recall, quite frankly.
What about the trip out then? Because it's a hell of a journey for a young lad at that time.
Oh, we went to... it was a hell of a journey. And we went to Iceland.
How did you get there? What was the route?
It was from Greenock, I think.
You seem to have been in a couple of places, Wilmslow and Leopardville.
Oh, Wilmslow was the just a concentration centre. It was a
holding camp. Sort of
a holding camp, yeah, where you sorted out, and people were going to various places. We were sent to the Leopoldville was a trooper.
That's a ship.
Trooper ship.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Now, what about the trip?
She was an old Belgian liner. I don't know how old she was, that had been carrying Italian prisoners, and she was filthy, really. I was on one of the decks with a hammock and you had to sling a hammock from the hook, you know, and you were sort of sleeping between two pairs of feet. So after one night, I think, I decamped to find a carpet under the officer's saloon table, which was deserted at the time. And so I just lay down there and slept. It was pretty horrific conditions because, well, it was wartime, you know, and the thing was rolling enormously. We had terrible weather going up to Iceland, and the poor destroyers, which were... four-stack American jobs that had been swapped for British bases. They were rolling, you know, beam to beam sort of thing. And
what was it like for you? I mean, seasickness?
I felt seasick, yeah. I felt terrible.
Was that pretty widespread amongst the draft?
Oh, I think so, yeah. And we were on one of the favoured decks, I think. It was done at a fast run, just with three destroyers escorting us. So they obviously expected a bit of trouble on that run. And she was sunk, if I may go ahead late. She was sunk on Christmas Day 44, I think, on just before Christmas. With a loss of about 800 lives. So, you know, that was the sort of conditions we were sailing in.
And when you got there, you seemed to have been in a transit camp for a week or something.
That was That was interesting.
This was at
Helgafell.
Where's that? Is that near Reykjavik? Or is it?
It was near Reykjavik, yeah, sure, but it was sort of isolated, and there was a stream at the bottom of the valley, and it never got dark. I think it was August, wasn't it?
It was, yes, and August 41.
We were sleeping a full flying kit on, because we had a flying kit with us, and I saw my first Americans there. They were they'd invaded with Britain, I think, to safeguard the route. That was it was very interesting there. We used to go to the hot springs, which I think are a famous feature these days. We used to wade into the water to shave and that sort of thing, because the water was warm. And they were supposed to be health-giving. It was quite interesting there. The natives weren't friendly, of course.
How did they show that?
They just ignored us. We used to go on route marches just to get us out of the huts, I think. There were about, I don't know how many, two huts full, I think. So there were probably about 100 people there. And then we were taken off and joined the Ausonia, which was an ex-Cunard liner, I think, who'd been press-ganged into service. And the crew were on what they called T124X articles, which I think bound them to serve the Navy, etc. And This was the Commodore ship, actually, and we did realise this when we took our station in a convoy of about 50 ships. And on the wings of that, we were in the front line, and the wings of the on either side of us, there were catapult ships, you know, with Hurricane perched up on the bows, and off the edges of the convoy were destroyers going back and forth, shepherding them. And that was about 11 days, I think, over to Halifax.
Which you got there. Anything happened on the journey, or?
No, nothing happened, fortunately. When we got to Halifax, the war spike was there. Roosevelt and Churchill had been meeting to cobble together the four freedoms, and the war spike was alongside us when we got there, but there was no sign of the Churchill.
Now, what happened next then? So this is where you're going to be training in Canada. What
yeah.
went to first?
We got on the train first, and that was sort of redolent of the Hollywood films. There was bug's eye on either side, and heavy curtains across, and we just rolled westward, and...
What was the journey like? I mean, that must have been completely new for a lad.
Oh, absolutely. getting pretty blasé by this time, of course. It was interesting. The running through Quebec province, it was every tiny village seemed to have a silver top dome church. I don't remember much about Quebec, but when we got to Ontario, the people came out and gave us apples and ice creams and things like that at, when we stopped briefly. And we finished up at Manitoba, near...
That's at Carberry.
Yeah, Carberry, that's right, which was a wartime airfield.
Now, what this is, it looks like SFTS, so flying training. Is it special?
Service Flying Training School, yes.
And what were your first impressions when you got there? What was the setup at Carberry as a flying training school?
Well, the first thing was I had a medical, and I failed.
Now, what's the background to that? I mean, there'd be no, you passed all the others, or...
Well, I thought I'd passed all the others. It was difficult to prove at that stage. I mean, I failed the medical.
And why had you failed?
On eyesight. And I think possibly my eyesight had deteriorated in the intervening time.
Now, was it this isn't colour blindness, this is just...
No,
this
is was
just short-sighted or long-sighted.
Short-sighted, yeah.
Now, that's
in
serious.
In fact, I had detected it before, quite honestly. But, you know, the medicos said I was fit, so that
so
was
you
that.
Were aware of it, but you kept your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Now, what happened when they detected it? I mean, that's serious in the RAF, bad eyesight.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, my career, it hung in the balance, quite frankly. They agreed to retest me. And I pleaded a heavy cold, you know, which I think I might have been suffering from at the time. And I was retested, and they accepted me. I suspect that they didn't want to send me home, quite frankly.
So you'd come this far?
Yeah, come a long way.
Now, what was the setup? I mean, how big an establishment was number 33 Service Flying Training?
Oh, it was pretty big. I've got a photograph somewhere.
They can't see it. If you could sort of, give us an idea of the scale of the base.
Well, there were about 50 on our course, I think, which was 28 war course. There was another course ahead of us, and probably another course ahead of them, about to graduate. The rules were strict. We weren't allowed to take photographs, and my pal was caught with a camera, and he was temporarily slung off the course. You know, it was that sort of do, which is I thought a bit unfair. But
was discipline strict generally?
No,
just
photographs, I think.
Why the bar on photographs there, and you'd not mentioned it anywhere else? I mean, what was there something sensitive about the base?
I don't think so. No, I can't believe there was anything sensitive. I mean, there were photographs taken by other people, and he was just caught with a camera, I think.
So there's more being caught than...
Yeah, it's a question of being caught. And the training was very good there.
Here you have a new aircraft. This is the Proctor.
Anson.
It's the Anson.
Yeah.
It's very now, what were your first impressions of the Anson? What did you think? What was the Anson like? It's a very different beast, of course, from what you've been flying before.
They were pretty well battered, I think. They were old aircraft, some of them still in Coastal Command colours, etc. I think the odd one had a gun turret still on it. And they had the detritus of war, you know, gun sights and that sort of thing.
Now, what were they like to fly? I mean, it's a bigger aeroplane for a start, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a twin. And
twin engine.
Twin engine. They were very safe to fly, I think. I think they were very forgiving aircraft, and I probably owe my life to the fact that they were very forgiving.
Did you find the handling stiff after a light monoplane? Or
not really, no. You took it as it came. Well, of course, it was heavier, obviously, than a light aircraft, but and the Magister. But it was pleasant to fly. You had to pump down the undercarriage and.
Now, what do you mean by that? People have mentioned that before. Was that?
You had a hand pump behind the seat, and it was your job to pump it down, because otherwise, it retracted, and you retracted it. You wound it up once you got airborne, and then you pumped down the undercarriage at the end when you were coming into land, and you had to pump down the flaps as well, which was a similar thing.
Was that hard work, or was it?
It seemed like hard work at the time. Usually you had two in the aircraft, because I don't think the instructor told you, flew with you, various instructors, and you always had somebody else there, another pupil, or they economised on the, they'd send two of you up together.
Now, what about your instructor? Seems to be Pilot Officer Proctor, or at least a lot of the time early on. What was he like? I mean, as an instructor, if you remember him, I mean.
Can I have a look?
Of course. First page is like, I think he did your duel with him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a pleasant bloke. He gave me one or two tips. I'm not sure how much experience he'd had, but he gave me tips about flying, and always look behind you when you take it off, because the Germans used to get in there on takeoff, and
so he'd done a tour.
I think he'd done a tour. Yeah. Well, he taught.
It's whether he had any experience instructing. You weren't sure of.
No, I don't think he had a previous experience instructing. I think he'd done a tour, certainly, because he told me about the searchlights and that sort of thing. I presume. He'd
was done it good, a tour. Solid, practical advice?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, he had no. Nothing to show that he'd done a tour. It just, I took his word for it. Yeah.
And did he improve your flying? I mean, was he? I mean, because that's in the end what he's there to do, isn't he? I mean, was he a good instructor for you?
I took it he was. Yeah. That's the night flying I found difficult, quite frankly, because I my short sightedness.
Now tell us about the night flying. I mean, what was it like with this added advantage of you being?
Had an advantage.
Disadvantage. What was it like night flying?
I was inclined to be quite confused by the lights. In fact, I couldn't see. In those days, and later on, I think they had the glide path indicators, which showed red if you were too low, etc., or too high, and green if you were in the right. Slope sort of thing, and I couldn't see these. I could never find them.
Is that your eyesight, or are you looking in the wrong place?
My eyesight, yeah, they were at the end of the runway. I had an instructor at the time, Sergeant Clough, or Flying Officer Clough. The night flying's in red generally. Maybe not.
It is usually in red, yeah. Probably come. There's various. Yeah, there are other instructors starting to come in as well.
Yeah.
You had problems with it, obviously.
I had problems with it, and but I learned to fly basically by the instructors, and in the end you get to judge the perspective. Of the runway, and that solves the problem, you know. Once you're used to the perspective,
you don't need the lights.
You don't need the glide path indicators, I reckoned.
So any other, what other things? A lot of cross country from the look of it, or it talks about sequence, I'm not sure. Sequence 29 at positions 1. I mean, is this all cross country things, straight runs, all sorts of different types of
flying?
Anything you remember, really? There's exercises there as well. What sort of things are you learning?
It doesn't say what the exercises are, just
no, unfortunately. Well, I guess some of them were navigation and radio communication. They fitted you up with a radio set and altitude flying. You'd go, I think the Annie would go up to about 13,000 feet, so you were on, you're getting the effects of no oxygen or low oxygen. I don't really remember many of the things about it.
A bit later, you're sort of doing lots and lots of cross country, and there's reference to a search of Lake Ontario.
Oh,
I don't know what.
Oh, that's that, that's that, later on,
that
isn't
is
it?
Later on. That's into
That's into my time at Mount Hope.
Oh, it's a different base.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Base. Right. So, anything else you remember about this course? I mean,
no, I was very relieved to pass it, quite frankly.
Course went on till December, from the looks of things.
So yeah.
Quite a long course.
Just before the, I think, the Pearl Harbor happened next day, sort of thing.
And how were you assessed at that? I mean, how do they actually, you know...
Well, they never we have one exceptional flyer, I think. Everybody else was marked average, or below average.
So average, which is what you are, you're down there as average. As a pilot navigator.
Yeah.
As average. Had you done much work on navigation, or is it just map reading, essentially?
It was mainly map reading and dead reckoning as well. And
do you remember the skills of dead reckoning, or, I mean, how complex was it?
Well, I wouldn't like to navigate now, quite frankly.
You were all right in it then?
I was all right then, yeah, I presume. And you did sort of camera obscura bombing, whereas you fired off
that?
They watched you on a camera obscura, and when you fired off a flare, when you reckoned you dropped your bomb, and they told you whether you got a hit or a miss.
Do you find that difficult, or was that...
It was all part of the drill, you know, sort of thing.
Anything else you did at Carberry?
I had relatives in Winnipeg, and we used to go to Winnipeg for weekends occasionally.
What was that like?
Oh, that was great. They called it the Electric City, I think, because there were so many electric lights there.
And is it that, far that away? I'm not very familiar with Canada. Is
it was about 120 miles. Yeah, yeah.
So a long way by English then, so not long by Canadian.
We used to hire a taxi and go there, and the taxi driver used to wait for us for the weekend and drive us back. Yeah.
What would you do? Just visit? I mean.
Well, I was taken at that stage. We were taken up by various families, quite frankly. I say quite frankly, quite a lot.
Don't worry.
Yeah, people with they was more or less queuing up to take us out and take us home, etc. I got adopted by a family with two daughters, and they just gave me the run of the home, sort of thing.
So very welcoming.
Oh, very welcoming indeed, and that was the general experience, you know. I think everybody was taken up by families.
So there was no objections to you being there at all?
Oh, no, no, certainly not. There was a big British element in Winnipeg, but I still have cousins there, quite frankly, but I didn't know their address at the time, and I contacted my uncle later, and he came over and picked me up, took me out, you know. So